The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
As always, absolutely delightful to be with you on The Doctor Is In Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, co-production Ave Maria Radio Communications and the wonderful EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, which is some 500 plus stations worldwide. I don't know how far out into the galaxy it goes. These radio waves just head out there. They're moving at about 186,000 miles a second, so I am talking pretty fast. But some place out there, maybe this thing's banging into Pluto. I don't know if there's anybody there to hear what I have to say. Doubt it. It's pretty cold out there. Probably pretty dark, too. Haven't seen really too much life on Pluto. However, if you're on this Earth, these radio waves get to you instantaneously. So be delighted to have you keep me company for a little while. This is E-Person Monday. My producer man is Andrew Krucek. And no call screamer today because we take your, well, we, notice how I force teaming you? That's what that's called when I use we. Like all of a sudden you're included and you didn't even ask to be included. I take your e-persons as they come in. I don't say email. No. I want to make sure I'm gender sensitive. And I wouldn't say answer them. I like to think maybe analyze them. Give a few thoughts in between the lines of the e-persons. So we'll get to those. Some of them go pretty far back, and some of them are within the last week. Depends. But we'll get to those momentarily. This statistic is kind of old, but I got a feeling it may be even more so. Nielsen Media says the average American home now has more television sets than people. According to the researchers, there are 2.73 TV sets in the typical home and 2.55 people. Half, 50% of American homes have three or more TVs. Now, the good news is we're watching less TV than we used to. And the bad news is we're just turning to other video venues like the internet, YouTube, various things that we can pick up, which leads me to my opening monologue here. Okay, let me get back here and get this. All right, this is an article by a guy named Peter Svab, S-V-A-B. This is, again, one more of the downsides. Now, I'm not saying this just to bemoan. It's said to give you some practical push, strength, if you will, to not only monitor yourself, but for sure to do something about your kids seeing this stuff. I'll quote him for a while, then I'll comment. Easy access to an endless stream of violence, combined with encouragement of violence on social media, is distorting people's attitudes towards violence. An issue that is difficult to solve, according to experts. Well, you don't need experts to come to this conclusion. It's pretty self-evident, if you will. Violence has always been a part of the human experience, but has never been available in such quantities. And here's the big one. for entertainment. If you go to any news feed or you go to X, watch as brawl erupts at local soccer game. Watch as person resists law enforcement. Watch as he goes on. In contrast with movies and video games, which show fictional violence, social media provides anyone the ability to see real violence with effectively no restrictions on age. That's right, folks. You got a 12 or 13-year-old who has access to this stuff, they gonna see it. And enough of it is going to deaden their idea of violence. It just becomes, whatever. The question's always been raised, why are we becoming seemingly so much more violent, so much more trip switch? Well, I think part of that has to be this steady diet of, look at this. Look at this. Isn't this wild? Look at this. If you watch any cop shows, especially the shows with detectives who are in the homicide units, as they're watching and looking over a gruesome, grisly scene, and these are live camera shots. They don't show the scene, but they show the detective's reaction. I would hope that you and I could not look at a scene like that as they do. Now, are they unfeeling and inhuman? Of course not. Of course not. They'll talk about how it affects them. But you watch them, and it's because they've seen so many of these things that it has deadened their revulsion. They may know it's horrible and awful and terrible, but they don't throw up like we would. They don't shrink back. They have to study it. They have to look at it. They gotta look for something that might give them a few leads. It's the same thing with the video games. He goes on, it's often presented as entertainment with flippant, crass, or cynical commentary mixed with other random content. Brain rot, there's a guy named Jeffrey Blevins calls it. He's a professional of media and journalism at the University of Cincinnati. Political divisions, and you see this, and this, I think this ties into so many of you calling this program and saying, I have relatives, I have adult children, I have people in my family, friend circle who really don't want to talk to me anymore because they don't like my politics. And what it says here, it has resulted in the casting of large segments of society as subhuman, leading to the suggestion that they deserve violence. This is according to a guy named Andrew Salopak, an associate professor of media and communications. Much social media platforms restrict graphic or violent content, but some content slips past anyway, and the other content is right on the edge of what the platform allows. Now, here's another tidbit that you might want to know as parents to give you a little bit more stiffness in your spine to hold off on letting your kids have unbridled internet access, or to hold off on the smartphone, or to at the very least put significant safety features. According to a 2024 survey of teens in England and Wales, 70% of youth age 13 to 17 see real world violence on social media. The TikTok users reported the highest exposure, 44% of them in the preceding 12 months. X users followed at 43%. Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, right there at 31% to 33%. Research literature has talked for years, I'm quoting the article again, about the issue of desensitization. That's so very, very true. By repeated exposure to violence in digital media. In real life, so far, fortunately, we don't really experience violence on a personal level. And if it happens, it's few and far between. We don't experience it every day, multiple times a day in the real world. But on social media, you can expose yourself to it for hours each day. The real stuff. And I now see one of the factors. I've often struggled to explain all the ingredients in this generational separation that is so prominent now, where the younger adults are just saying, I want nothing to do with my parents. One of them is the idea that, depending upon the algorithm that pushes itself on you, you can see all kinds of images and information that basically say, people who think this way are evil. They deserve to be hurt. They deserve violence. And, of course, if you happen to be a parent who has certain views morally, politically, and your young people who are much more likely to spend all these hours on social media and see you be dehumanized, well, what the heck? I probably should separate from my mother the way she thinks and the way she looks at things. So just another bit of warning for those of you who are wrestling with, gosh, if I don't allow my kids this access or this device, I'm just going to be so out of touch. Yeah, well, I'd rather be out of touch than to be an accessory in my children's being hurt emotionally, socially, morally, behaviorally. Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
John 14. This is Jesus in the upper room with the disciples before he's going out to his sacrifice of himself for our salvation. And Philip says to the Lord, show us the Father and we'll be satisfied. Jesus looks at Philip and says, Philip, have I been with you all this time? Don't you understand? When you see me, you're looking at the Father. In fact, only two people throughout human history have given rise to the question, not who is he, but what is he? The two people are Buddha and Jesus. Buddha's answer was, don't come to me, don't look to me, look to my doctrine, look to what I teach. Jesus' answer was, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart. Jesus is explicitly claiming to be God.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. Dr. Ray Grandy. This is In Person Monday, the variant, one of the variants of Doctor Is In. We usually have Mondays reserved for the e-persons that we get, both through the radio program and the TV program, Living Right with Dr. Ray. Now in its 15th season, they're going to be airing season number 15? 14? Boy, even I can't keep track. I look back at season number one, and my attitude as I look at me hosting the program is that my son that did that? Yeah, you want to see changes in 15 years? Don't look back at 15 years ago. You'll think you didn't change. They always tell you that. You go to your high school reunion, you don't look any different. And I always say, no wonder I couldn't get dates when I was in high school. Okay, let me go to this particular one. Hi, Ray. Oh, boy. We recently lost our 41-year-old son to brain cancer. Losing a child at any age is just devastating. Because for most of us, it seems so counter to the way things are. But one thing we do have to remember is that for most of human history, it wasn't counter. They estimate that child-infant mortality rates for much of human history was about 50% prior to age 5. My mother took me to a cemetery when I was much younger because she wanted to show me where a number of her little brothers were buried. My mother was one of 5 children. Her mother had 13 pregnancies. Some of them were in the womb deaths. Some of them were under 5. I think 2, 3, or 4 of them. And interestingly enough, one of her brothers was named Armando, which is Italian for Raymond. So she says, "We take care of my 96-year-old mother." And I'm quoting her now. I ain't saying it. I'm quoting her, who is a typical stubborn Italian. Okay, I can relate. I hate the thought of putting her in a home. Now, interesting, notice the choice of words, in a home. It makes it sound like, you know, kind of like in the old days, the poor house, the poor people's home. Actually, it would be in a facility that would be hopefully catered to her needs. But we're going through all the layers of grief. I'm assuming she means with the possibility looming here. And at her age, I am guessing that she can become very self-centered. I would have horrible guilt if we placed her. My husband said that we've had mom with us for 31 years since my dad passed away. How could we put her in a home at this stage? How do we deal with this? I don't know what your mom's capacity is for safety. In these situations, it is uncommon for an elderly parent to say, I would like to live in another setting other than my own home or a home of one of my adult children. That's very uncommon. There's a lot of reasons for this. One, of course, is just the idea that I'm going to be having to give up everything I've known all my life. And the other one is probably for some, there is judgment that is affected. When you get older, and if you're starting to have some incipient, that means just very beginning, deterioration, dementia, then your ability to think things through reasonably is affected. And you think you're much more capable than you really are. What typically happens in a situation like this, and I think to our writer, a situation will occur that will force their hand. In other words, her mom will fall. She'll wander off. She'll put something on the stove that threatens to burn the house down. My own mother-in-law, some of the things she was doing, she had a dog, and she, instead of spraying water on the dog, she would spray some kind of chemical. She didn't realize she was doing that. And those kinds of things were happening. She wandered off a couple times. So what tends to happen is that you're forced, for the safety of the elderly parent, to make that move. Now, will they understand it? Well, to the degree that they're clear enough, no. But if they're far down the road in dementia, by time they move to the new environment, within 2 days, they've forgotten they even had another place to live. So, to our letter writer, I'm going to say that if you can maintain her in your home, and you feel that she's not at risk, and you monitor, because obviously you're probably going to have to monitor 24/7, which can really burn out someone. If you can do that, then you maintain. I've seen some people just maintain it for, oh my, almost to the very point of complete confusion and unawareness on the part of the elderly parent. They get in-house help. They divide up the supervision between siblings. But at some point, an event usually happens that, despite your very, very best intentions, it's not tenable anymore. There's no reason to feel guilty, because what you're saying is, I would have liked to have been able to keep mom with us. My preference significantly would be for her to not go to a place that she doesn't understand, she doesn't recognize, she doesn't know. Absolutely, I don't want that. But if there is enough physical and or mental deterioration that forces that, you have no choice. And you can feel bad that you had to do that, but you can't feel guilty for doing that. That's two different things. You can say to yourself, this decision was forced upon me. I had no choice. And to the degree that your mom still has clarity left in her thinking, she may blame you. She doesn't understand. So, the guilt is misaimed. You have nothing to feel guilty about. More and more people are living like your mom. She's 96. That's an incredibly long life. But there's a lot more of that. I saw some statistics on the centenarians in our culture that's exploded. People over 100. The number one factor in incurring some form of dementia is age. That's the number one factor. As you live longer, your ability to think things through and to accept becomes it becomes constricted. And in this case, our letter writer said, typical stubborn Italian. Well, maybe not so much. Maybe it was just more the brain not comprehending some of these things. But who knows?
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy.
we get what we look for. St. Therese of Lisieux has an interesting insight on this. Once in a discussion over the possibility of avoiding purgatory, the future saint told another member of her community, Sister Maria Febronia, that God was more father than judge. And in this discussion, debate, she finally took the liberty of saying to the other sister, "If you look for the justice of God, you will get it. The soul will receive from God exactly what she desires." Are we full of wounds and anger and hurt, and do we want to inflict that on other people? Are we allowing God to heal us? If we receive His mercy, we have to show it to others. The Beatitudes are the heart of Jesus' message. Let's be transformed by them. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
How do we raise faithful kids? Well, the answer is surprising. Make the faith the source of the warmth in your home. 50 years of research involving thousands of families has shown that the single most important way to increase the likelihood that children will own their faith as adults is to let them experience the practical difference their faith makes in their daily family lives. Kids who grow up in homes where the practice of their faith makes their households more peaceful, more loving, more joyful, are much more likely to practice their faith as adults. Why? Because for kids especially, faith is only real if they can see it being lived out at home and producing good fruit in their relationships at home. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Once you lose faith, if somebody does something to you and hurts you one time, two time, three time, four time, St. Peter thought seven was a good number. How often should I forgive my brother, Lord? Seven times? My Lord said, no. 70 times, 7 times a day.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. I used to say tackling emails. Can't do that anymore. That's rather manly aggressive. So I'll say something like... addressing, responding to, pondering. Now, this is interesting. This is probably the first time I've gotten this kind of beginning appellation to an e-person. Good afternoon, Dr. Guarendi. Oh, this person's got to be a college prof or a teacher. Somebody literate. Literary inclined. I saw you on Lila Rose's show. And I feel that I really align with your parenting principles. Yes, I was with Lila Rose, a couple, three months ago. Setting expectations, following through with consequences. I liked blackout and coupled with high amounts of affection. I am really struggling with my current family dynamic. I am stepmom. There's the dynamic. To a 12-year-old girl and a 9-year-old boy. The 12-year-old can be very difficult and disrespectful to her father and brother. Now, keeping in mind that father is allowing this, and the brother, well, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to go, but at some point he's going to have enough. She's not that way with me, which is interesting because I would think that she would say, "Hey, you're not my mom. I don't have to listen to you." It's a very common accusation from stepkids. Her father, my husband, does not follow through on consequences. He typically gets frustrated and yells, and then things blow over. That's what happens. That's what happens when you don't have calm, confident discipline. You tend to get really upset. We don't choose to live with undisciplined people. We don't like that. And then even when there are kids, it's tough on us. I have brought up the need for consequences and follow through many times. Okay, Mom, I'm gonna offer you a piece of advice right here. Don't bring it up anymore. I would probably say something like, instead, do you like getting that mad at her? What do you want to do different? Perhaps, now, you didn't say this in your e-person, does he allow you to intervene? Does he allow you to discipline? Or do you have to just stand back and let it go? That's another dynamic. Okay, I don't know that. I feel I don't have a lot of control here. Well, does that mean you don't have discipline control or you can't alter your husband? His reasoning, and this is very common parental reasoning when there is a divorce situation, is that they are with their bio mom about half the time. So his sticking with consequences is hard when they are not under our roof. That is true. That is true. However, much of the time, parents are fearful that the child will compare households. And if one is more permissive than the other, that in a period of time, like this is a 12-year-old, so maybe by the time she's 14 or 15, it's, I want to go live with Mom. I've got my own smartphone. I can stay on my smartphone as much as I want and as late as I want. She doesn't nag me to do chores. Now, here's how I think you can influence your husband. That's going to happen more quickly if he persists in yelling and screaming as his main mode of discipline. Where he's getting confused, and you might be able to help him on this, is that he thinks that by setting up expectations and consequences, he's going to drive them closer to their mom. Just the opposite. His frustration and anger toward them because of their misbehavior that he doesn't deal with is going to drive them quicker to their mom. Dad's mean. Dad's ugly. Dad just yells at us. Rather than, Dad makes me write an essay, but he loves and hugs me and kisses me. To make matters more challenging, okay, go ahead. Bio mom is even more permissive, allowing the kids to do whatever they want without consequences. I feel stuck. This is not how I see myself as a parent, but I don't have a lot of say or power when it comes to intervening. I want more than anything else for the kids to grow up secure and successful. Please help. Oh boy, Mom. I got to tell you, this is a common step-parent dynamic. The step-parent sees the situation and says, this is not good. The parent with shared custody says, you don't understand. I'm competing with the other parent. The other parent is Disney parent. The other parent lets them do what they want. The other parent gives them what they want. If I want to continue to see my kids, I'm not going to be able to have to. I can't discipline them. If I discipline them, they're going to get mad at me. Maybe, Mom, you could help him to understand that by being the more reliable parent, the more confident follow-through parent, he will be less angry. Yes, there's nothing he can do about that 12-year-old daughter making comparisons between her permissiveness at her mom's house and your rules and regulations. Unfortunately, this dynamic that you cite is so, so very common. The step-parent often is more objective about what needs to be done. The bio-parent is more emotionally scared, unsure of themselves, trying to compete, especially if the other parent is more permissive. I would offer a couple of things. One, you're going to have to keep your mouth shut. You can't keep badgering him about what he needs to do. You're going to create marital problems. Two, you focus on what you're allowed to do. What are you allowed to do? You say, right now, that 12-year-old isn't disrespectful to you. Why is that? What are you doing different? Does he see it? Will he start to see it? Three, you ask him if he likes the direction that his family life is going right now. Focus on that. Do you like what's happening here? Do you like the fact that they fight so much? Do you like the fact that she can be so surly and disrespectful? Is that what you want? Is that good for her? I'd focus, I guess, on the process and recognize that in the end, you may be helpless. I know you're saying, I don't like being helpless. Here's the bad news, good news. If he doesn't make changes, it's going to deteriorate. And if it deteriorates, now things are going to change. They'll be forced. This 15-year-old will then say, I'm going to go live with mom. I don't want to live here. She'll become even more uncooperative. And then he won't have his daughter at all, assuming he allows that to happen. So in fact, you are in many ways helpless, but you can still make the right observations. God guide you.
He is only one of four popes honored as the great.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Leo I was pope at a time when Roman civilization was being overrun by barbarian armies. He stood as a light in the darkness and even saved the city of Rome from destruction by Attila and the Huns. Leo died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. In the Bread of Life discourse, documented in John chapter 6, Jesus states that he is the bread of life, and that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. The Jews were scandalized in verse 52. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? Jesus does not back down, but reiterates this teaching four more times over the next four verses. Many left in verse 66 because this teaching was truly difficult. But at no point does Jesus water down his teaching and call them back. No, he allows them to leave, and even questions his 12 apostles if they too wish to leave. Jesus intended to be understood literally, and the Jews, apostles, and the Catholic Church absolutely take him at his word. Examining the truth of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. My neighbor, that's amazing. He knocked on my door last night about 2:30 a.m. He pounds on my door. Could you believe that? I would have been upset, except that I was still up playing my bagpipes. So other than that, okay. All righty. My daughter said she wanted me to get a pet spider for her birthday. So I went to the pet shop, and the one she wanted was $70. I said, forget that. I can get one cheaper off the web. E-Person Monday. As parents of our four children, our hearts are in pain because we raised them with Catholic beliefs. Now that they are adults, they don't want to do anything at all but the Catholic Church. Obviously, this is something we've talked about many times in this program. It's an epidemic, absolute epidemic, that the young adults in numbers totally unseen by far. Now, obviously, we don't have surveys, but if you just look at the population of Christianity, we don't, and maybe, you know, it may be actually more likely among Catholic parents whose kids lose the faith, because the Catholic Church and its liturgy and its moral requirements, its moral guidance is very clear, and in a lot of ways is very countercultural. A lot of Christian churches are a little looser about certain things, a little more Jesus and me, and so as a result they are a little more acceptable to our modern mindset. But the Catholic Church is very clear. It's standing strong against the culture. And so it's not unusual for the kids as they get older, because they get shaped by the culture, the way the culture thinks. They get shaped by all of the incredibly powerful, seductive influences that say religion is old-fashioned, religion is bigoted, religion is judgmental, religion is awful, it's been responsible for so much pain, it's hypocritical, etc., etc. Maybe perhaps most of all, religion squashes the way I want to morally act. So she says, now that they are adults, they want nothing to do with the Catholic Church. Our 22-year-old daughter is sleeping over at her boyfriend's home. She wants to live with him before getting married, and she does not want to marry in the church. My husband seems to care more that our children go to church than them having a good relationship with him as an adult, and that is making our daughter distance himself from him. I think he has forced religion on them now, instead of letting them develop their relationship with the church and with God on their own. Situation is stressing me out so much that I'm getting bald spots. I'm in the middle trying to keep the peace at home. Mom, first of all, you raised your children as you thought best. There was no part of you that said, well, let me see if I can do things that will make them leave the faith when they're able. You didn't do that. But Dr. Ray, maybe I could have done more. Maybe there were things I missed. Well, I think we all could do more. And if you probably had a fault in raising your children in the faith, it was that you were human with all of your weaknesses and your inability to predict the future. So all that said, the guilt that you would experience has to be let go. You have to let it go. Now, your 22-year-old daughter sleeping over at her boyfriend's, if she's living in your home, you're perfectly able to say, we can't allow that. It goes against our deepest held beliefs. If you were on your own and you slept with your boyfriend, there's nothing we could do about it, and we're not going to write you off. But you're living here, you can't do that. Then you'll have a decision to make. That decision will be, if you choose to sleep with your boyfriend at his house, we're not going to enable that. We're not going to cooperate with it. So you're going to have to choose. Now, of course, she'll choose her boyfriend. It's no surprise. However, it sounds like she's choosing her boyfriend already. So if you say, yeah, but she's going to go live with him. Well, but she's kind of already having relationships with him. So I don't know how much different that would be, and especially since she doesn't see anything morally wrong with it whatsoever. Now, regarding your husband, maybe you could tell him that if you have a relationship with your children and you love them and even treat her boyfriend pleasantly, that does not mean you are agreeing with what they're doing. You're not condoning it. Now, if they think that, that's their misthinking. You're not doing that. You raised them. They knew for 20 years how you view this stuff. So the fact that they're adults and right now they're turning their back on it and you're still trying to have a relationship with them doesn't mean that you're sacrificing what you believe. It simply means you're trying to keep a connection with them so that perhaps at some point they will return to the church. They will rethink the way they're doing things. This relationship with this boyfriend will break up. You have to keep the connection up, because if you don't, you have virtually no chance of influencing them back to the faith. Then you have to hope that their own behavior makes them rethink things, or that in a mysterious way God will move their hearts and souls. Maybe you can convince yourself, your husband, that the better move is to have a relationship with them and tell him it does not at all mean you are condoning what they're doing. Our Lord ate with the societally viewed worst sinners of the time. Eating, fellowship, this deep connection in that culture. You eat with somebody, you're really connecting with them. It's not like us going out to a restaurant and sitting at the same table with somebody. No, that was for them. It was a sign of deep fellowship. He ate with them. He didn't condone what they were doing. And I don't know that he ate with them just once either. The gospel's not clear on that. He may have eaten with them multiple times. I don't know. But even at that, he didn't condone it. He was just trying to reach them. As he said, those who are sick need a doctor. The people who aren't don't need a doctor. He was the doctor. So maybe you can convince your husband, hopefully, because that's, I think, where your best change is going to take place. And please, please, if you are in pain about this, if your peace is destroyed, you don't want to make Jesus look like he doesn't know what he's talking about. Because he said, I will give you peace that the world doesn't understand. The depth of peace. And if you say, I know, yeah, I know you would, Jesus, but wait, you don't understand. See, my kids have left the faith, so therefore I can't have peace. He says, I'll give you peace. And as far as I know, in those early manuscripts, there's not an asterisk there that says, unless your children leave the faith. I'm Dr. Ray.
Anybody who goes to a psychoanalyst ought to have his head examined. So let's examine ours.
I'll send you my consultation fee.
The doctor is in. The doctor is in.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, teach me to pray. The free Ignatian Prayer Series will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
What does the Church mean when she speaks of social justice? The Catholic Catechism says society ensures social justice when it allows associations and individuals to obtain their due. Social justice can only be accomplished by respecting the transcendent dignity of man. In other words, society exists for man. Man does not exist for society. The person, says the Catechism, represents the ultimate end of society, which is ordered to him. By refusing to recognize the inherent rights of the individual as endowed by the Creator, a society undermines its own moral legitimacy, according to Pope John XXIII. Respect for the human person stems from the principle that everyone should look upon his neighbor as another self. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Notice you just don't hear anybody whistling anymore. If you were walking down the street or you were in a mall or something like that, a store, and you saw somebody or heard somebody just whistling, would that seem odd to you? Bing Crosby, for all the mellifluous sound of his voice, was the story is most proud of his whistling. In the song White Christmas, that is Bing doing that whistling riff. Sorry, I've kind of lost some of my whistling ability. But I struggle. It's interesting. Think about this. I know I'm digressing, but how is it that if you whistle, if you can whistle, and you can whistle a tune, that you instinctively know how to hit the right notes? You're not playing an instrument so that you know where to go, or playing a trumpet so you know which parts to hold down to hit that note. I can know where my note's going to go, but I have absolutely no idea what my mouth is doing to create that note. It's always fascinated me. What is it about whistling? But you have to admit, if you heard somebody whistling in a store or walking along just whistling, it would be foreign at the very least, would it not? I mean, when was the last time you were out in public and you heard somebody whistling? But it might also make you think, well, that's weird. All right, I got about a minute and a half left here. I had to stall for time because I couldn't get another e-person in. My wife and I, our children, are all raised. Some of them have very much embraced the Catholic Church. Some of them are lukewarm toward it. Some, well, I wouldn't say some, maybe one, has moved into an evangelical setting. None of them are hostile at all to the Catholic Church. Well, that's good. That's really good. They're not hostile. But my wife and I will not tether our peace to the decisions our children make as adults. We love them very much. That's not going to change. And we pray for them constantly, of course. Everybody does who has children in those situations. But we're not going to be... We've decided... We've willfully, deliberately made the decision not to torment ourselves over the direction our children have gone with their religious sensibilities. I fully recognize that some of them, those few that are away from the church, could come back to it after I'm gone from this earth. And if I'm in heaven, maybe the Lord will let me know that. I don't know. But at the same time, I watch so many parents so distraught, so devastated because their children have done this as young adults. And I want to say, but you did what you were asked to do. Yes, but I don't want them to go to hell. You don't know that. Our Lord loves him more than you do. And I'm sure that in a lot of ways his grace could reach him. Just don't know it yet, huh? Thanks, Andrew Kruczek, for all you do over there at Ave. Thank all of you for keeping me company, good Lord permitting. Talk to you tomorrow as we inter-ear on The Doctor Is In. Walk with God all the way to forever.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.